You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. This week, we're bringing you three stories from the early days of coronavirus lockdown in March. A lot has changed since then. Almost overnight, we came up with solutions for working from home, staying connected to friends, and engaging with arts and cultural institutions from afar. But when people go back to doing these things in person, will they still be available to people who can't leave their homes? Carrie Shear has been ringing people who live with disability to hear what their experience of the coronavirus pandemic has been.
Hello.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Good, good.
Great. So thanks for taking my call today.
One of the first people I spoke with was Jane Gersh, and she told me something that I found kind of surprising.
A lot of what's happening now to many in the world is very similar to what happened to me over 20 years ago.
She said she felt like she'd already lived through this experience when she had an accident that led to a traumatic brain injury.
Isolation, for instance, that was huge when I had the accident. I lost my job. I had no income of my own. I had no control. You know, you just learn to deal with it every day, and you're the only person, whereas at the moment, it's affecting everybody. So when I've been faced with what we've been faced with now, I just think it's a walk in the park.
There was a common theme among everyone I spoke with. Next, you'll hear from Belle Owen, Jane Quirk, Nick Schumi, and Deborah Carlion.
Disability a lot of the time is compromise and flexibility and adapting and changing and problem solving, you know, all of the things that are helpful with dealing physically and mentally with a pandemic. It's just kind of in your toolkit.
Maybe it's having a bigger impact on people that don't live with disability, because I find that as people with disability, every day we have to problem solve. Every day we have to figure something out.
People with disabilities are definitely more able to sort of go with the flow a lot, because there are a lot of people that rely on other people to do a lot of things to assist them with. So if something happened and things would have to change on the fly, whether it's one of your workers couldn't attend or something had to change for whatever reason, people with disabilities are used to things being a bit sort of all over the place sometimes. It makes us more equipped to deal with what's going on.
Some friends that don't have a disability, they seem to be really upset that they can't do this and can't do that. But I don't think that, so I've had more and more things that I haven't been able to do and more places I haven't been able to go independently. So I guess that it's made me better equipped to deal with this.
So literally everybody I talked to told me a version of the same thing, that their lived experience of disability made them really well positioned to be able to handle the coronavirus pandemic. But then Deborah, the last person you just heard from, said something else that I found really intriguing.
Now we've got a lot more access to things like Skype, and actually a lot of us in some ways are better off than we were before.
I mean, could it really be that many people living with disability are actually better off than they were before? Well, it didn't take long at all to find somebody who could absolutely validate this claim.
Yeah, I've had like the busiest weeks that I've had for a really, really long time.
That's Ricky Buchanan. For over 20 years, she's been mostly homebound and bedridden. Those are the words she uses to describe her situation. As many Australians have found their social lives becoming very quiet due to the strict social distancing measures, Ricky's been having the opposite experience.
It's just amazing. All of these things that I've been campaigning and struggling to make available for 20 years have suddenly popped up and become available. For example, there was no chance that concerts could be made accessible online because intellectual property laws just made that impossible, that there was no chance that film festivals could become online. And I think just 3 orchestra concerts and 2 film festivals in the last 2 weeks online, they've just magically become online because now everyone else needs them. it feels very odd to kind of say this is the outside of this terrible, horrific thing that's happening. Because, of course, I wish the terrible, horrific thing had not happened. But it is happening, and my gaining advantage or not gaining advantage isn't going to change it either way.
But there was a dark side to this newfound accessibility.
The first Melbourne Symphony Orchestra concert that was online, I couldn't even enjoy it. I just literally laid here in my bed and sobbed. All of us always knew that when people said this is impossible, that it was a lie. Everyone knows nothing is actually impossible in that way. That if there was enough political will, that these things were possible. But it's very hurtful to have it ground into your face that all those things that we were told for so long were impossible weren't even really very difficult when actually people cared about them. It was just that no one cared about us. Society probably hasn't even noticed that it has suddenly made itself more accessible to bedridden and homebound people.
And that's what really terrifies her, because all of this accessibility, it wasn't by design. It was just a byproduct of the pandemic. And so when it's safe for everybody to go back to work and go back out to restaurants and cafes and concerts, is all of this just going to disappear?
Like, what do you do when all the stuff you've advocated for lands in your lap temporarily and then gets taken away again? Like, that's really hard to deal with.
You know, if all of this accessibility does disappear, disability advocates will have a strong card in their hand.
When companies say, no, that's impossible, now we can say, but you did that in 2020, you did that. It will be much harder for them to argue that it's an unreasonable accommodation to request.
But Ricky is also hopeful that maybe now people will be a little bit more aware and understanding.
I think a lot more people in society now realize it's really hard when you can't go out and you're excluded from everything. Although being locked down or in quarantine isn't the same as being long-term homebound, that it will give people a bit more of a glimpse of what our lives are like. And hopefully that will come with a bit more compassion, and maybe that will help them understand why I need, and people like me need, accommodations like this.
So just take a moment to let this all sink in. Not only are many people living with disability really well equipped to handle the coronavirus pandemic, but some are actually feeling more connected because of the different types of access that have emerged from this. So as Australia starts to ease its social distancing restrictions, let's not lose the silver lining of accessibility.
That story was produced by Carrie Shear. It was originally produced for the JFA Purple Orange podcast. You can hear more stories like this one by visiting purpleorange.org.au. These conversations were recorded a few months ago. Carrie recently called Ricky to follow up as things began to open up again. Ricky has said that for now the accessibility has stayed. She thinks it will stick around at least until there is a cure for COVID-19, but said she's not taking any of this accessibility for granted. She keeps reminding herself how amazing it is that it's here and that it could go at any time. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. Everyone's been expressing how grateful they've been for essential workers during the pandemic. But gratitude doesn't keep essential workers, like Sophia, safe. And it doesn't pay the bills.
Seven a.m. I wake up in the dark. 7:30 a.m. I mix salt instead of sugar into my tea. My cat screams. At 8 a.m., I'm the only one on the bus. I catch the bus at about 7:30 in the morning, and it went from only standing room to being three people on the bus and then to just me. And so the bus would be running 25 minutes early, and so me and the bus driver would just drive to a bus stop, and then we'd sit in silence for about 10 minutes, and then we'd start driving again, and then we'd stop, and then we'd sit in silence for 10 minutes, and then we'd like rinse and repeat until we got to our stop, my stop. And there'd be a really sad, like, okay, thanks, that was awesome, see you tomorrow, bye. Yeah, one had a Sudoku, I think. It was a little relaxing. It's picked up now, which is kind of sad. It was nice to not have to worry about maintaining distance in such a close, confined space. At 9 a.m., the shop is empty, so I practice bad origami. It was dead for like 2 weeks, and then they made everyone go on holiday because it was dead, and then it picked up, so it's now 200% more business than we would normally do in May or June. I work in retail. I cannot legally say that I work for a because we're not supposed to talk about what we do at work, technically. One customer cries about going into administration. And at 10 a.m., another customer refuses to use a pen, but didn't bring his own, and keeps an uncomfortable 3-meter distance between the two of us. I've got to be honest, most of the resentment that I think the people I worked with had is that originally there weren't really any safety measures for us at all versus like a lot of other companies that felt like they were prioritizing their staff more. And not even for us, but people that work for this company, you know, a lot of them are not even in a shop. They're just direct contact with other people. And they don't have any protection at all. And they work long hours. When you're in that sort of environment and you get update videos from like CEOs and it's obviously green screen from their living room because they've been working at home for like 2 months, it's a little demoralizing where they say, stay safe, support each other. I'm at home, you know, in my house in Edgecliff and I'm having a good time, but you guys stay cool, you know? We believe in you. I think that's the most aggravating thing about this. There's a bit of a disconnect between people who need to work to keep things going versus people who are not in that position. At 11 a.m., I sit in the lunchroom and watch a life insurance commercial. A woman tells me, the end is nigh. 13 people died in New York, and I have a crisis.
While filming, another victim of COVID-19 was moved to the hospital's temporary morgue, a refrigerated semi-trailer.
It was like an older couple, and the dad was like putting stuff in the back of his Toyota Cruiser or whatever, like a canoe, and the mother comes out and she's like, honey, there's something I want to talk about. And the dude's like, oh, what is it? And then the woman's like, I think it's time that we talk about our life insurance. And he's like, what? I've never thought about that before. And then she says,
oh, but it's so easy. And it means that when we die, our children won't have to worry about our funeral.
And then I think, as an audience member, why are you thinking about your funeral when you're about to go canoeing with your children and your husband? That implies that something's going to happen to your husband while you're canoeing. And the husband says, oh, well, do we have a life insurance policy? And the woman says, well, I'm so glad you asked because I actually opened one. Why, I think that's illegal. Don't you need the person's permission to open a life insurance policy for them? Question mark. And then the father's like, oh, explain how it works. And then the woman says, it's so easy. They just ask 5 simple questions about whether you smoke and how old you are and what your assets are. And if anyone wants to kill you, it'll be great. And then he says, easy. And then he signs on the line. And then like a woman comes out at the end and is like, something, something, life insurance, something, something. The end. And it was weird as shit. And also it was, at that point, the early days of coronavirus in Australia, so no one knew how bad it was going to be, so everyone was very tense. because people are like, are we going to hit 10,000? Are we going to hit, you know, how many people are going to die? How many people are, and then, you know, some prick with a husband and a canoe and a Toyota Cruiser comes out and is like, actually, have you considered updating your life insurance? And everyone else is like, no, people are dying, Kim. At 12 p.m., someone panic buys $2,000 worth of gift cards. At 2 p.m., I go home. I am the only person on the bus. At 3 p.m., I lie down on my cat on the floor. My cat's name is Chester. He's giant and orange and really stupid. He screams in the morning when he doesn't get fed, when he wants to get fed. He's awful. We call him Mr. Sausage. We were supposed to have a party tonight, so I do the next best thing and have a crisis. At 5 p.m., I succumb to human temptation and read Harry Potter. I'm not proud. At 6 p.m., my cat vibrates, so I feed him ocean loaf and he slurps on the floor. At 9 p.m., I stretch on the floor. I watch Chinese dramas. And Tiger King. At 10 p.m., I scroll. At 11 p.m., I lie in the dark and reflect. I'd like two things. I'd like hazard pay, and I'd like the ability to punch customers in the face. That's all I want. I really feel like that would fix a lot of problems, not just with this, but also in the world as we know it. Posties, like postal delivery workers and people who work in chemists and supermarkets, I wish that they got more than a round of applause. There's this thing on Smooth FM at the moment where they've been advertising this thank you concert. I'm not sure if you've seen it. They've been advertising this amazing lineup of people that are gonna, you know, perform for the people on the front line and how grateful we are and all that sort of thing. I just wish that those people were protected by legislation and they got paid more and the people in charge of those people appreciated what they were doing more than anything else. They can keep Ed Sheeran. I don't want Ed Sheeran. I want hazard pay, you know, I want less demeaning videos from people's living rooms. Ugh.
That story was adapted from a comic by Sophia Malika, with sound design by Ellie Freeman. Ryan Pemberton was the supervising producer. Let me take you back to 3 months ago. I'm walking into the supermarket, hand sanitizer at the ready, praying that there will be toilet paper. I don't care what the ply count is, I'll take anything. As I pick up my basket and enter the fruit and veg section, I see a Coles employee surrounded by a halo of fluorescent light. She's pushing a trolley into the store from out the back, stacked to the brim with 24 packs of 3-ply king-size toilet paper. My prayers had been answered. In our final story, Janen takes us back to the toilet paper panic buying crisis of March 2020.
Yeah.
Hey, you got the goods?
Yeah.
What's the ETA?
5 minutes.
Okay, see you then.
Yeah, that's my dealer.
Wow, 4-ply.
I only provide the good stuff.
My toilet paper dealer, of course.
With shelves stripped bare as Australians prepare for a pandemic, take a look at this. We went out to take a look for ourselves yesterday and there wasn't a toilet roll in sight.
Such a bizarrely precious commodity. Two men have hit the loading zones of a string of Woolies in the west in Granville. And here in Auburn, they managed to make off with around 400 rolls. One of the men was armed with a knife, and at a time like this...
A Bankstown mother and daughter have been charged after a fight over toilet paper in Woolworths. The vision of the shoppers arguing with another woman went viral as supermarkets impose new purchase limits to curb coronavirus hysteria.
Yeah, you heard that right. A man was armed with a knife just to steal some toilet paper from an Auburn supermarket. Two women punched each other over the last packet of toilet paper in a local Woolworths. But these scenes aren't so shocking to most people from these areas. And if they shock you, then hi, and welcome to Western Sydney. Hi, I'm Janan. I was born and raised in Western Sydney my whole life, and no, it's not a ghetto. It's great, and it's what I'm used to. In fact, when I started going to the University of Sydney a year ago, I definitely found that to be a scarier place. I often felt like I needed to tone down my Lebanese accent because I sensed the people in my classes weren't used to people like me. But nonetheless, I've always been proud about my background and proud to be Australian. There is no arguing that COVID-19 has brought about difficulties for all of us. People have become hysterical. I mean, toilet paper out of all things is what we're fighting over. And with suburbs in Western Sydney like Auburn, Bankstown and Liverpool ranked with some of the highest toilet paper crime rates, coronavirus hysteria and panic buying is no stranger to our daily lives. A close friend of mine works at Chullora Woolworths, where the punch-on over toilet paper took place.
Yeah, it was really crazy. They were, like, punching each other over toilet paper and the police were involved.
Were you there on the day?
Yeah, like, I got all the inside goss on it. It was really crazy.
How has it been, like, getting your hands on your own toilet paper?
We've been hiding stuff in the back dock and, like, having to smuggle it out in, like, plastic bags because, like, if any customer sees it, then we're pretty much dead.
Haven't there been, like, lineups for it? Like, you've had to, like, not put it on the shelves anymore?
Yeah, we've been having to restrict them. So, like, we actually bring out the stock altogether and then we have security guards handing them out one by one because of the incident.
No way. So it's not available on the shelves?
No, we can't put them on the shelves because, like, we can't trust people to follow the restrictions. And, like, obviously it got violent last time.
This is why I need my own private supplier. But still, young, able-bodied people like myself have it easy. It's the elderly who we should be worrying about, especially those with a carer who can only do their grocery shopping once a week just to find empty shelves. I visit my grandmother often to make sure she's stocked up.
Hello, Tata.
Hi, hello,
Nana. How are you? I brought you a toilet.
Hi, Allah, you're welcome. I'm going to get you. شو عم تعملي تفضلي تاكلي لك لقمه
جوعانه؟ لا والله تيتا عندي وجبه
فوتي شوي
عندي والله
الله يرضى عليك يسلم دايتك الله يوفقك يا نانو
يلا السلام عليكم
تيتا السلام الله معك.
She gladly accepts the toilet paper and begs me to come inside so she can feed me lunch. It's 4 p.m. in the afternoon, by the way. I kindly decline and say that I have heaps of homework. On another note though, while the majority of people are hoarding supplies to themselves, you can get lucky. My older brother recently experienced a miracle at his local supermarket.
So 2 days ago or so, my wife and I were shopping at Woolworths. And whilst we were shopping, I accidentally bumped into a worker there. And I politely apologised to him. And once I had done that, he looked up and he goes, "Do you need toilet paper?" I'm like, "Yeah, to be honest, we're totally out." So he quickly disappeared into the back storeroom. And moments later, he came back with Kleenex, 9 rolls, 3-ply, the quality good stuff. And we were pretty happy about it.
This is all a few months ago now. All the toilet paper hysteria and panic buying has died down, for now at least. I just got to figure out what to do with the 300 rolls of toilet paper in my garage. At least I'll be supplied for the next 2 years. And well, as for my dealer, you know, Mr. Tough Guy, he was forced to return to his regular job.
So what have you been up to lately?
I'm working at the hospital.
Doing what?
I'm a nurse.
Oh. And what did you learn from this experience?
People change when during desperate times. You know, people change and people go, they kind of lose who they are based on what's going on. But, you know, my wife and I stayed pretty steady. And I think maybe that's part of the reason why the guy helped us out, maybe, is because we were really chill. You know, even if we didn't have toilet paper, we're like, you know what, we can use tissues. And even, you know, even 100 years ago, our forefathers didn't have toilet paper. So what did they use, you know? So it's not a necessity, to be honest.
That story was produced by Janen Ibrahim. The supervising producer was Lee Redfern. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay and Angela Moran are our social media producers. And I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find more episodes by searching for All the Best, wherever you get your podcasts.